Welcome and good evening, everyone, to Reedley City Council meeting. Today is Tuesday, August 27, 2019, and it is hot outside. I know I'm not the weatherman, but it is hot. This evening, the invocation will be done by Micah Thiessen, middle school director from,
Reedley MB.
And the invocation will be done by council member Betancourt. If you please stand or remain standing till the Pledge of Allegiance is done by council member Betancourt.
Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, thank you for the people in this room. Thank you for the leaders that you've placed here in Reedley to offer direction for this city. Thank you for the life and the breath that you continue to give us every day. And most of all, thank you for Jesus Christ, who died on the cross to pay for the sin of everyone who would repent and trust in him alone. Father, you say in Scripture that if anyone asks you for wisdom, you will give it to them because you give generously and without reproach. And so I ask you for wisdom tonight. Please give wisdom and give insight to the people here for the decisions that need to be made and the discussions that need to be had. And please bless this meeting as it proceeds. And I think I would also pray for a reprieve from the heat as well. So we just ask for that. And of course, we would commit the remainder of this evening to you and ask that you would get all the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Please join the council in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Do we have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Here.
Councilmember Fadden.
Here.
Councilmember Salino.
Here.
Mayor Pignoni.
Here. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening?
Mayor, there are no additions or deletions. However, I do want to point out in the packets that were delivered, if you were missing an item 12 and 11, they were swapped around. So those items are in the packet and were delivered to the public or to the library where we deliver the public packets. So simply a vote to approve would be fine.
So moved.
Motion. Second.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Mayor Pignoni?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass? Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Very good. We have several presentations this evening. And we'd like to call or invite Chief Garza to begin our presentation this evening. Introduction of a new police officer.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, members of this community. It's my pleasure this evening to introduce the newest member of the Reedley Police Department. Who I have with me today is Callie. Now, don't say Kaylee. I've made that mistake. It's Callie Olivas. Callie was born and raised in Clovis, went to A Clovis School. I'll just say A Clovis School because there's so many of them over there. Now, if she went to Reedley High School, then I'd say Reedley High School. But she went to and graduated from Fresno State with a bachelor's degree in criminology. So some of Callie's prior experience in law enforcement comes with the Fresno Police Department in their chaplaincy program. She had the opportunity of working with the chaplain's program there. And so she had an opportunity to deal with that other side of law enforcement that a lot of folks really don't understand or don't see. So hopefully that will help her in her career and most definitely hopefully help other officers and our community when she runs across them and stuff. So she has that, so she understands that empathy side. So it is a pleasure to introduce Callie. She's been now working for 2 weeks now, Callie?
Yes, sir.
And so she's been doing a great job so far. I do understand that she is a city manager. She's a really good shot. She qualified in the first round. Yeah, so I've already ordered her not to qualify or not to be any better than me, which is not very hard to do apparently. So but it is with great pleasure that I do introduce Callie Olivas to you this evening. So Callie.
Welcome.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
The family is growing. ED. Next presentation is an introduction of new administrative assistant. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what it is. Kayla Cheney. Sarah Reed.
Yes, good evening, Mayor and members of the council. Sarah Reed, Community Services Department. It's my pleasure to introduce our newest hire, Kaylee Cheney, as Mayor has said, to the Community Services Department. She comes to our team with an extensive background in accounting, management, customer service, and marketing. She's an alumni from Fresno Pacific University, where she received her bachelor's degree in communication studies. Prior to her graduation, she earned a scholarship from Lindenwood University to play softball. They actually recruited her from here at Reedley College to go play there. Kaylee was born and raised in Kingsburg, so small town is not new to her. She started on August 12th and has jumped right in and doing a fantastic job. So with that, I'd like to let Kaylee say a couple words.
Good evening. My name is Kayla Cheney. I'd like to thank City Manager Nicole Ziba and Sarah Reed for the amazing opportunity that has been presented to me. Since graduating college, one of my goals was to find a career path where I could leave work at the end of the day and know that my job impacted many people for the better. My career journey has finally brought me to the city of Reedley and assisting Sarah and the Community Services Department in doing just that. I am excited to be a part of the city and its future. I look forward to coming to work because I know that my dedication will help the advancement of the city and the people. I'd like to thank everyone for their time this evening.
And boy, those are tough shoes to fill. This is Denise's replacement.
Yes.
So. Not an easy job.
And to show how small the world is, I met her husband, Matt, who's here this evening. This is my brother's best friend, little brother. So we grew up together. So thank you, Kayla, very much.
Very good. We have the next presentation. Introduction of Asami Nelson and Erica Sosa as the 2019-220 Community Service Commission Youth Representative. Sarah.
Yes, thank you again. Go ahead and come on up, Erica. So the youth rep with the beginning of the school year starts the new term for our 2019-20 youth reps. The obligations of the youth reps are to attend all of the commission meetings, to provide a youth perspective to the commission and items that are discussed, and then to also get involved with 3 to 4 of the community events that happen amongst Reedley. That is not just coming themselves. Sometimes we ask them to bring additional volunteers to help us sell tickets, do money, face paint, just a multitude of things to get them involved with the community events. So I have Erica next to me, but before I let her speak, I want to speak on Asami. She was unable to be here tonight or any Tuesday night in the near future because she participates in the marching band. So I told her I would speak on her behalf. She was actually one of our youth reps last year as well. She reapplied and was selected again. She's a senior at Reedley High School and very involved with clubs. She's involved with the Students for Peace Club, the president of the French Club, secretary of the Sports Medicine Club, and then a drum major for the marching band. Wow. And in her spare time, she writes for Kings River Life magazine. So her reason for wanting to continue to serve is to help improve the community and to assist in recreational and community events to demonstrate the youth support in our community. So this is Erica Sosa, and I have asked her to speak for just a couple seconds about what she hopes to get out of this opportunity and a little bit about herself.
Good afternoon. My name is Erica Sosa, and I'm currently a senior at Reedley Middle College High School. At Reedley Middle College High School, I participate in many clubs such as FFA, where I have served as an officer for 3 years. What interests me in applying to be a youth representative is I know when I was a little girl, I participated in many of the activities that the city put on, such as youth soccer, and I think those activities made me the person who I am today. So I just wanted to apply to learn more about my community and give my input to better, or not better those activities, but help put on those activities. And also I think this will be a great opportunity where I can learn and better my skills. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah and Erica. Next presentation is item four, video presentation by Eric Valencia, Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. Eric?
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here with all of you. Very excited to share what's going on with the Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce, and excited that tomorrow will actually be my 2-year anniversary. So crazy that how time flies. But we've been working very hard to meet our mission of being a catalyst for business growth, a convener of leaders and influencers, and a champion for the city of Reedley. So we have a lot of things coming up this fall. I'm sure you are well aware that the Reedley Downtown Association has now officially dissolved. They are no longer in existence. So all of their events have now come to the Chamber of Commerce, and so we are busy getting ready to put those events on. Also been working with the city of Reedley to assist in some events that we have going on with the Reedley Business Resources Expo that's going to be on September 12th. I believe Nicole already shared some of that information with you, but I shared another flyer just in case. Also that same day, been working and very exciting to work with Nicole and Rob on celebrating our new mural. Isn't it beautiful? I mean, they did a great job, and I'm hoping you've heard great compliments, but that's all I hear from everyone that I speak to, how much they love that new mural and what a great job was done. So I'd like to give a thanks to you for supporting that and supporting the arts in our community. Thanks to Nicole for spearheading that and listening to the community for wanting something special like that in our community. And we're really wanting to keep building on the arts in our community and possibly looking to the future of how we can do more murals in town. So in discussions with Nicole, we said, why not, let's do an art hop. Let's really celebrate the arts with this mural. So September 12th, I hope you'll come out. 6 o'clock, we'll do an, what are we calling it, Nicole? And are we going to just say an unveiling or a little?
We were going to call it an unveiling, but it's already unveiled. So then we thought a christening, and Russ's crews would kill me for breaking glass. So I think we're going to call it a celebration of the new year.
Yes, so we will celebrate. We'll have a special way out in front of the mural. And then from there, we're telling everyone to go ahead and hop from shop to shop, and been working with the businesses. It was exciting to go visit all the businesses and see how excited they were to be a part of this. And also the response of artists that have contacted me wanting to participate in this. So it is amazing. We have a lot of artists from young kids to adults and to professionals that want to be a part of this. There is a big interest for this. So just so exciting. And we're really trying to build on the whole art aspect of the community. Because of that mural, the Fiesta has also decided to select their theme to be Paint the Town. That will be the theme of the Fiesta. So we're really trying to connect everything with this whole vision of the arts in our community. And so it's very exciting that everyone's kind of jumping on board, and the networking we're doing with the city and the chamber and all the organizations, Rotary taking on with the parade, very exciting things happening.
In before we move off the art hop, because this is the first opportunity that our council's heard of the art hop, because we know that art also encompasses music. So in addition to local artists being showcased and exhibited in our stores up and down G Street that night, and the artists will be there to explain their art, we are also going to have music, because music is also art. And so our own John Ornelas, along with a couple other soloist artists, will be on G Street. John will be playing some gospel and some blues. He'll be at one location. We'll have two other soloists at different locations. And so we're pretty excited about what this event could become.
So. Nice. Most definitely. And definitely bringing some life after hours downtown, which will be nice to see. So just excited. Like I said, in many ways, the community is excited about this, and so are the people that will be participating. Also, we have coming up the Reedley Taste of the Town, which will be on Thursday, September 26th. If you're interested, tickets will go on sale next week for that. And also, we have the Reedley Fiesta, which this year will be on October 11th and 12th. And like I said, the theme will be Paint the Town. So sticking with that theme for Reedley. Other events now. The Chamber had two major events that we used to do. Now taking over the RDA, we have six new events, so a total of eight big events that we're going to be trying to organize this year. So that will include the Reedley Taste of the Town. We'll continue with the Fiesta. We'll be continuing with the Trick or Treat on G on October 31st. There'll be a Ladies Night on November 14th. Small Business Saturday and the Tree Lighting will be Saturday, November 30th. That following week will be the Electrical Farm Equipment Parade on December 5th. Then we'll have a little bit of a break, take a breather, and in end of February, we're looking to do our Chamber Awards Gala. Hope to have you there. And we will stick to the first Sunday in May for the street fair. So we have our all our events stacked up, and we're getting ready for that. I just want to really thank you for the support you guys have given to the Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce and the mission we're trying to accomplish. So on behalf of my board, I really thank you for the investment that you've given, and we hope that we're doing our job. I'm working hard as I can to really provide this community with the benefits that the Chamber should be providing. So I hope you are satisfied with the work we are doing, and we are continuing to work hard to provide those services for our community. One of the things, obviously, we're on a small budget, but we try to do things that promote our community. So one of those things that I saw was a competition this spring to... it was a competition through Valley PBS, and they were trying to promote their memberships. And so basically was they had the Chamber of Commerce's competing against each other to assist them in promoting their membership drive, basically. And so I decided to join that competition against some other Fresno chambers, and we ended up winning that competition. And winning that competition meant that we got a video produced by Valley PBS. Now, I'm sure you're aware that the city has had videos made to promote the city and how expensive that is. It could be several thousand dollars. The only thing that this required was my time and my love to find photos and images that we could put to be in this video. So I think they did an amazing job and very excited that I can share that with you today. Mm-hmm. So I do have two videos. I hope you have enough time, but one will be the Valley PBS video and the second video will be our promotional video for the Reedley Fiesta.
Reedley's motto is the fruit basket of the world, and we are the biggest producer of stone fruit in the United States.
When I joined the Reedley Chamber was truly because I've seen just the vision. Like, I got Eric's vision. Like, I got the Reedley Chamber's vision of what they wanted. They don't just care about a certain part of town or a certain area. They care about all businesses and all community as a whole.
Reedley is a city of 25,000. We are nestled up against Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park in the Sierras. This little city is really actually a very sophisticated city with just a tremendous amount of assets.
You can have instant access to security, whether it's with the police department, City Hall. If there's an issue with roads or streets or something going on, you can go straight to the top. There's not a lot of bureaucracy. Small towns get things done.
Being a small town business owner, being a member of the Reedley Chamber of Commerce has truly changed my business dramatically. From networking to marketing, anything that I needed or had questions about, they were just a phone call away.
When we were growing out of our last office space, I contacted Eric. He went right to town and started calling people for us.
The city of Reedley is a very strong partner with the Reedley Chamber of Commerce. We are always communicating everything from events to policies to even sharing ideas on marketing and campaigning, etc.
It's important to have a strong chamber that's going to be a voice not only for the whole community but for the business community as well. One of the important aspects of Reedley is the educational opportunities here for families and the choices of the schools, whether it's public or private, that they can choose to send their children to within a 6-mile radius.
We have one of the best performing school districts in the state. Very proud of that. We have one of the lowest crime rates in the state. Very proud of that.
The small town charm of Reedley, it's that that warmth that you get from just genuine people here in the community that truly care about each other. They care about their neighbors. They care about the small town growing and supporting each other in any way possible.
City of Reedley is growing, and we're seeing more businesses coming here. But if you walk downtown Reedley, you're still going to get that small town feel where you can wave and yell at someone, "Hey, how's it going?" across the street. I'd love to see more entrepreneurs move to Reedley because it's a great opportunity for them. It's more affordable, and you got a great network of other businesses that are established that would want to see you grow and succeed.
What I would like everyone to know about Reedley is that it is a great place to live, work, and raise a family.
The Reedley Chamber has truly been a voice for the community of Reedley. From the north to the south, east to the west, they have truly cared about the growth of Reedley and just keeping the values and the traditions alive here.
So I apologize, it was a little choppy, but I thought they did a good job with that.
Yeah, for the record, that is our connection here that's making it choppy like that, not the video. The video is well done.
So it is on. If you look on YouTube and type Reedley Chamber, you can see the video and get a cleaner view of it. And then the second video, is that on there?
And we are here live.
Okay, now this is promoting
Roberto
our
from
Fiesta.
Welcome to the show. You excited about Fiesta coming this year? Oh my goodness. It's been such a big year for you, you know, being introduced to the city of Reedley last year. And now it's already been a year. Can you believe it? I can't either. I can't either. When is Fiesta this year? 4, 8, 10. Okay, October. October 11th and 12th. You got it. Okay. Good. Are you ready to talk about the theme? Are we able to announce a theme? Oh, okay. Okay, paint the town. Oh, wait a minute, my director's telling me. Wait, there's somebody in here concerned about the frog. Come in and get the frog.
Roberto, what are you doing?
Chicho Garza.
I need you back in the town.
You're live on TV. Right?
But I need him back in town.
Brianna, he needs to go.
Come on, let's go.
Can you help me?
Come on.
Chief,
hey, Brianna, how are you doing? What's the weather like in Reedley?
Chief, the frog.
Come on, Roberto. Enough having fun. We need you back in Reedley. A lot of planning.
What a mess.
Seriously.
So thank you very much. We're very excited on everything that's coming up and appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. By the way, I just wanted to say publicly that, you know, I hear a lot of great compliments and comments about what you're doing, and your office is making a difference in Reedley, and that's what we need.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Very good. We move on to public comment. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Council not to answer any questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are not on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the City Council as each item is brought up for discussion. Are there any comments from the public? Being none, we move on to consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action. and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoptions of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Is there any item or items that council wishes to pull from the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull items 7 and 8, please.
Motion to approve the remaining items.
Second. Councilmember Adams?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Pinon?
Yes. Item 7. Ratification of approval for Councilmember Fass to attend the League of California Cities annual conference in October 2019 and designate her as the City of Reedley's voting delegate at the League of California Cities annual business meeting. Administrative services.
And I'll go ahead and take that for admin services.
I'd just like to abstain from this vote, so that's why I pulled it from the consent.
Oh, perfect. Okay, and I'll just give a refresher. Under the city's new policy, any conference or travel expense needs to be authorized by council for any council member who's going to attend a conference. So in this particular case, Ms. Fast is the only council member available to attend this year's League of California Cities conference. In addition, the league does require that the city council approve the city's voting delegate for the conference. So you've seen that happen annually each time we have a league conference. So that is what this item is about.
So we need a motion to approve?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve.
Second. Are there any questions or comments from the public? Being none?
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Pinon?
Yes.
Councilmember Bapp?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Item 8, adopt resolution number 2019-064, approving and authorizing the city manager to sign an agreement with VRPA Technologies, Inc. for the formulation of a farmland preservation program for the City of Reedley. Community development.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Rob Terry, Community Development Director. Happy to answer any questions you have on this item.
I understand that we have used this company before for our bridge project, and they did a great job for that. There was a list of different places that client list of where they had worked, and I always try to make sure that they have projects that are around here too that they've been working on in addition to ours. And I notice, well, I can show you my black.
They blocked out half of
it. I can't read half of it. So is there a way we could get a list sent to us that has some color that I can see the
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, on the black and white copier, because of the color scheme that the consultant had used here, the items that were blue with black ink here simply just came washed out. Yeah. Our apologies for that. But I'd be happy to pass the entire proposal along to council in its color form. But VRPA does have extensive experience all throughout the San Joaquin Valley, but really specializes in items all throughout Fresno County. They are a Fresno County firm, first and foremost. The CEO is born and raised in the area and has done a considerable amount of work here and recently done work, even in addition to the bridge project for the City of Reedley through Fresno Cog Circuit Planner Program. We've utilized their services over the last several years when they had that contract as well.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I just wanted to see what all some of the other places that they have worked at.
I'd be happy to pass that along.
Yeah, so if you could just email us the colored copy.
Will do.
We'll show those. I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Bapp?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Pinon?
Yes. We move on to administrative business. Adopt resolution number 2019-059, approving the subdivision map improvement agreement and final map for phase one of vesting tentative subdivision map 6196. Community development, Rob.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Rob Terry, Community Development Director. The item before us tonight is due to the request of the owner of vesting tentative subdivision map phase one, 6196. They're requesting the city council approve the final map for phase one associated with their project and also approve entering into a subdivision improvement agreement for timely completion of the public facilities that are associated with phase one of their project. All of this is in accordance with Reedley Municipal Code sections 11211 through 11219. I would like to point out that council's role in the final map process is that of a ministerial action. As items have been approved through the tentative map process, the applicant then has the opportunity to take the approved tentative map with the associated conditions of approval. They will prepare a final map, which includes the legal descriptions, everything that would create the individual lots for sale. It identifies the right-of-ways, the areas of easement, and all of the associated technicalities that would go along with those items. And they also then have the opportunity to address all of those approved conditions of approval. If those items are brought back to the county and they are requesting the recording of the final map and they can show that they have accomplished the conditions of approval and the final map that has been prepared has been reviewed by the city surveyor and the city engineer and found to be in substantial conformance, technical conformance to the tentative map approved, then the city council is requested to provide staff with the authorization to accept that final map and to submit it to the county for actual recording, which begins the process of creating the individual lots, which can then be sold and individually developed. So with that said, a little bit of background on the project. Vesting Tentative Subdivision Map 6196 was originally approved by the Reedley Planning Commission on December 14th of 2017. Consisted of the development of 161 single-family residential units on approximately 31 acres of land. On June 6th of 2019, the Reedley Planning Commission was then approached to approve amendments to the project's conditions of approval that would allow the project to build in two separate phases and by two different developers. At that time, the Planning Commission unanimously supported that requested action there. And the developer also requested to enter into a subdivision improvement agreement. That is attachment two on this item here. And that is to develop, again, phase one of the vesting tentative subdivision map. Phase one consists of lots number one through 67 of the total 161 approved. So we'd be looking at a final map for 67 total lots today. Such activities to enter into a subdivision improvement agreement would need to be covered by a security bond and other specifications that are agreed to within the agreement that is being brought forward for your consideration today, along with the final map. And I would note that all of the bonds required to cover the public improvement costs have been received or were received by the city prior to the scheduling of this meeting here. With that said, the city engineer has reviewed phase one final map submission for conformance to boundaries, public easement locations, dedications, closure calculations, and other required information, and the city engineer has consequently found that map to be in substantial compliance to the tentative map that was originally approved. I would also note that on August 22nd, Self Help Enterprises, who is the owner of phase one of this map, held an additional public outreach meeting August 22nd to be able to go over their programs and this project. We'd received some questions from the neighborhood, and despite the fact that it was an approved map, they wanted to make sure that they were having good open communication with the adjacent neighbors, wanted to make sure they understood exactly what the project was, what it wasn't, what the anticipated timeline was. And so we had about a dozen people attend that meeting there and had some good dialogue with them, have continued to follow up with some of those that had additional questions about background of the project, the area in which it's being built, and will continue to do so throughout the entire project. All the fees that are associated with the processing of vesting tentative subdivision map 6196 have been paid. And that is both for those that were due at the Planning Commission level and those that were also due before City Council. City Council has not taken any prior actions on this vesting tentative subdivision map up to this time, but today we are, requesting that City Council approve phase one of the final map for vesting tentative subdivision map 6196 and authorize the city manager to make non-substantive changes to the attached draft agreement and to sign the final agreement with Self-Help Enterprises regarding their subdivision map improvement agreement. So that concludes staff's presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about this development.
Terry, that meeting that they had, public was going to ask questions. Was there any opposition to this plan?
I think opposition would probably be a strong word. There was certainly concern, as there is with any type of new development coming in, and certainly some misunderstandings about what self-help does and how they operate. In particular, what affordable housing means and what it does not mean. So the way that this developer works is unique as opposed to many other affordable developers that will come in and they will simply build an item and then you'll be dealing with, you know, Section 8 housing or vouchers to, you know, that allow people to pay for their rent. Whereas what self-help does is they come in and they build market rate homes, but they utilize sweat equity with the people up front to be able to knock down a lot of that down payment and the upfront cost that can go into building a home, which can be very substantial. As a result of that, a lot of people that would not otherwise be able to qualify are able to qualify for homes. So many times when people hear something like a self-help and an affordable housing developer, they're afraid that the homes that are going to come into their area are not going to be owner-occupied, and concerns, of course, that they might impact the value of their properties that are adjacent. But these are market value homes, and they're built by a very reputable developer and one that has experience in the city of Reedley already with four previous developments.
So does this project meet the mandate that the state had put on cities and counties that we have to build affordable housing?
It does. That's one of the unique things about this is an opportunity for market rate homes to be built, but because they have programs that are meant to assist with the affordability of it, these items are still able to be reported to the Housing and Community Development Department with the state of California as meeting your regional housing needs allocation numbers.
So if we don't meet those, it'd be hefty penalties on counties and cities, isn't it?
And that's an ever-evolving item with the state right now. Over the last few years, as the regulations and policies have become tighter and tighter, they used to be recommendations, then it was you had to have X amount of land identified where you could build. That's now turning into units that you have to report have been built, with the state readily getting to the point where if you don't meet those numbers, then there'll be certain funds that you will not be eligible for, even to the point where they could take away a certification of your housing element, which then can create significant challenges for grant funds in many different areas.
So you could say there's a little pressure on the city then.
Yeah, I think to clarify and just make it really clean, this is a win-win for us because we can count these homes towards the affordability in arenas, and yet these are market rate single family homes. So the neighborhood around, you know, generally we think of affordable housing as multifamily units, apartments, right. Section 8, et cetera. These aren't those. These are very nice, let's say 1,200 to 1,500 square foot homes on 6,000 square foot lots. It'll look like every other single family housing development. They just happen to have a unique way of being able to get folks into these homes that might not otherwise be able to afford it. What is really unique about self-help and so awesome in my mind, the homeowners that go into these homes get training on how to be a homeowner. I mean, that's the way it should be, right? Because we get into homes and we don't know how to maintain them. We don't know about all the capital expenses that go along with homes. They get training up front to learn how to be a homeowner. And the nice thing for the surrounding neighborhoods is these have to be owner-occupied. They cannot be turned into rentals. And we know from statistics that rentals sometimes make property values decline in single-family neighborhoods, and crime rates tend to go up a little higher. The self-help neighborhoods we have in our city right now, if you drive around and you look for them, and by the way, if I don't tell you where they are, you would never know which neighborhoods these are. We actually ran a little data comparison, and the self-help neighborhoods are actually, the crime rates are less than in surrounding neighborhoods where the houses look exactly alike. It's a unique phenomenon, and I think self-help has really figured out how to do it right. So we're excited about this project.
And the only reason I'm asking these questions is because when people hear about self-help, they have a different vision of it. And this information is important to get out to the public mm-hmm. of what we're doing so they understand why it's happening.
Mm-hmm. You know, I joked with Rob yesterday that if this developer was named Regal Homes, nobody would have an issue. Right, but because it's named self-help, somehow we have an issue, and yet these families go through a background checking process mm-hmm. that you and I, our neighbors, didn't have to go through. So these are safer neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods actually end up with more ownership and buy-in because neighbors are building their own homes, and then they're helping each other build their own homes, and so you actually start with a community from scratch. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So mm-hmm. I do agree with you. I think that the reputation out there of affordable housing or something is really inappropriate in this context, and yet the nice thing for us is we get to count these homes towards those RENA numbers that are so critical for us right now.
Okay. Yeah. I love the fact that the way they organize them is they build in groups of nine. So this tractor would be built nine families building nine homes all together, and it's not like you just work on your home and everyone else works on their home. Mm-hmm. You work on all nine of those homes, and so the fact that that really creates this sense of community, you know your neighbors, you know their home. I mean, before you're even moving items in to live there, you're already skin in the game, part of that community, and very, very familiar and caring deeply about what's happening there. So it really is a great model. We understand the fears and the concerns that people have, and we're always going to address those with transparency, and we're always going to be responsive to what those fears and concerns are, and hopefully be able to help teach them what the items are and what they aren't.
Yeah. If you drive on the subdivision south of Frankwood, the self-help, they kept that neighborhood very, very clean, and it looks nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
And the homes... I'm kind of critical of development and how the home looks from the outside, and it doesn't look cheap. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, like something I would want to move into.
Yeah.
Another thing that I noticed is I had some questions on these lot sizes, and some of the development on the other section have smaller lots, but these lots are from 5,000 to 7,000 square feet lots, so they're good sized lots, so they're not trying to just cram and slam, you know, places and people together. They're spreading them out, and they will make it look very nice. And I think if you've had the opportunity, staff could give you directions of where these properties are that have been built in the past, and you cannot tell the difference between a home that somebody else developed and built, you know, specifically for a person versus a self-help home. They're very nicely designed. They're simple, but they're very, very well set up to fit into neighborhoods that want to have these chances for these people. I'm real excited because there are many families in Reedley that don't have an opportunity to have a home, and hopefully a couple of people that I know will get an opportunity to have one of these homes.
I know the developer has told us that they already have a fairly significant list of families within Reedley that are already into the program and into the pipeline. And their goal whenever they build in a community is to recruit from within that community, because mm-hmm. every community has people already there that need homes. And so that certainly has been their focus and will continue to be.
I do want to state in relation to Mr. Salina's question about the community meetings. Other items that came up in the community meetings, we typically do hear with development, frankly, of any kind. Yes, we want development in our city, just not in our backyard. That came up. The other things that came up, though, that I want to address to make sure we get on the public record, there were concerns that we had somehow rezoned this property without doing it in the public venue, and that is completely inaccurate. Every rezoning that has occurred on this property has gone through public notice, has gone through Planning Commission, has gone through the City Council. As a matter of fact, Rob had tallied up, I think, something like 6 public meetings in total for any rezone or something
10 actually for this one, yeah.
10. Everything was done in the public light, very transparent. So rezones that occurred on this property were well known and very much in the public's eye. There was also concern brought up at these public meetings that somehow these property owners nearby, when they had built their homes, were promised that custom homes were going to be built near them and that these are not the custom homes. And frankly, that's not a concern we can address. None of us were here decades ago when those homes went in. I don't know that that's a promise any city person would ever make to a neighborhood, because development is so haphazard and changes throughout time. So those concerns did come up. We tried to address them as best we could in the community meeting.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob. I just want to say I think it's a great idea, a great method in which families can not only get to know themselves, but, you know each other in ways in which even in the future can help each other and, you know, just can bond somehow. That would, I think, make our community stronger. I think it will. So my question is, I realize we're in the initial stages of phase one, but when does the actual sale of these homes begin, or the promotion of availability?
So if the city council were to approve the subdivision improvement agreement tonight and authorize city staff to submit the final map to the county for recording, the county will go through their process. Usually takes anywhere in between 3 to 8 weeks for them to finalize the actual recording there. In the meantime, the applicant then would be working with us to review their floor plans, to go through the actual building plans, to have the building official go through those items, and they could begin construction on the public improvements on their land. So putting in their streets, curb, gutter, underground work, those type of items. And then you're typically looking, depending on whether mobilization of the developer, all of those items, usually around a 6 month period or so before you'll actually see sticks and rooftops coming out of the ground. Now, self-help, we were just speaking about it a little bit earlier, self-help actually sells the lot to the parties before they begin building. Most larger developers, when they come in for a subdivision, will actually build spec homes, and then someone will step in and buy them after they've been finaled, right at the tail end of the process. Self-help actually does that opposite, so people immediately have skin in the game on that one. So I, to answer your question directly, and had to give a little bit of that background, my apologies, but to answer your question directly, I think in between 6 and 8 months is when you'll see sales actually starting to happen, and that should be right around the time that you're seeing construction of the homes themselves starting to take place as well.
One more question. Let's say a family is single parent family and 2-3 kids. Is it, and I don't know if this is the right time to ask this, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you have, or is there a possibility where relatives can get involved and help them build that house? Or is that, you know what I mean?
You know, I do. I would have to actually defer that question to the self-help representative. They could answer that one for you there. I know that people are allowed to use volunteers and whatnot as they're working. You're required to put in a minimum of 40 hours a week throughout the entire building process. And I do not believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I do not believe that has to be just you. It's 40 hours.
20 hours needs to come from the individual who's going to own the home, or who's on the mortgage, and then the other 20 hours.
Would you please step up to the podium? Thank you. You state your name, please.
Sure. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Betsy McGovern Garcia. I'm the Director of Real Estate Development for Self Help Enterprises. And to answer your question, yes, we encourage family members, friends, other community members to help contribute volunteer hours towards the construction of the homes. We do require a minimum of 20 hours per week from the individual who's going to live in the home or who is on the mortgage, and then the balance of those hours can come from friends and families. We occasionally have community groups, Rotary clubs, local banks, things of that nature that want to volunteer, and so they'll come in and contribute hours towards building those homes, and then we credit everyone in the group for those hours. We also occasionally have family situations that come up. Someone's working a lot of extra overtime, a family member is sick, and we work within that group to identify solutions to help them continue through the construction of their home. So we have a lot of different avenues for being flexible to make sure that our families are successful.
Great. That's good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from the council? Comments? We have a motion to approve. Any questions or comments from the public? No?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Mayor Pino?
Yes.
Thank you.
And we go to item, I guess this was switched, so we're going to do item 12 first.
Yeah, this will be the item on the utility enterprise funds, adopt resolution 2019-074.
Very good.
So, Paul.
Oh. So we are, okay.
So we're following the agenda in the packet itself. The item was switched.
Okay. Number 12, yeah.
Adopt resolution number 2019-074, amending the FY 2019-20 adopted budget to appropriate $11,077 in additional utility enterprise funds for programming updates to city utility building software to be compliant with SB 998 requirement effective February 1st, 2020. Administrative Services, you're on.
Oh, thank you very much, Mayor and City Council. This is at the heart of it is a request for additional appropriations of approximately $11,000 from the city utility funds to pay for some programming changes and updates to our billing software that are the result of a new law that was passed last year and is going to be in effect in February 1st of 2020. So ordinarily these types of budget requests aren't followed by a presentation, but because of the impact of this law, SB 998, on our utility operations, we felt it was a good time to bring the council in on what this law is and what the anticipated impacts are to our utility system, specifically Water Enterprise, and our own utility billing operations. So SB 998, known as the Discontinuation of Residential Water Service, and known also as the Water Shutoff Protection Act, was signed into law September 2018 and requires all public water systems with more than 200 service connections to provide certain notices and options be given to those customers before their water service may be terminated for non-payment. The effective date of the changes, as stated, was February 1st, 2020. And it's important to note also that commercial accounts are not affected by SB 998. This is only residential accounts. And so the city, we've talked about it a little bit in the past, but the city has more lenient shutoff practices than many of our surrounding communities. I don't know exactly if we're the most lenient, but we do have fairly lenient shutoff practices. However, our current practices do not conform to the requirements in SB 998. So because of those requirements, there's impact to our operations as well as to our billing software. So we're currently working fairly quickly to try to get our arms around this, to try to get everything in place before the due date. And the reason why additional funds are requested at this time, back in 2016, the city did an evaluation of our financial system to make sure that it's still meeting our needs or if there was a better solution out there. So we spent quite a bit of time on that, and ultimately what we came back with was that given the financial condition of the city and the cost of the new software system, it was more than just a one-time expense. There was additional ongoing expenses to support that new system that were just simply too much. So we elected to essentially reinvest in our current system about $30,000. So we've implemented all of the improvements to kind of bring it up to current standards, except for on the utility billing software. We saved that for last. We saved the best for last, essentially, to revamp our utility bill, make it more user-friendly, more readable, and to update our online payment portal. So we were just about ready to start that when this new law came into effect. So once we started to get our arms around this and our financial system vendor also started to get their arms around it, we came up with a basic cost proposal to update our system, but not paying for 100% of the cost because they have other customers that are also in this predicament to have to do this. Mm-hmm. So we're not paying for the full cost to rewrite the module. We're sharing it with other cities that are still using our current financial system package. So that said, this $11,000 is in addition to the approximate $30,000 the council gave us approximately 3 years ago to finish out all the rest of the upgrades, which is primarily on the utility billing software, but we need some additional funds because of the extensive impact from SB 998. So with that, that's the budget resolution, and it's coming from all three of the enterprise funds, with the rationale being it's the proportionate share of the base rate. And that's what we paid for the upgrades to the financial system back in 2016. So we're using that same rationale. So even though SB 998 is primarily a water bill, we felt that it was appropriate to have all three enterprises contribute to their proportionate share of the base charge. So, but again, it's only $11,000. It's still a lot of money, but we feel it's a good solution to come into compliance. So that said, I'd like to do a brief presentation on SB 998. We did attach the full bill language. I believe it's 7 or 8 pages, if you're so inclined to read it. But I do plan on just touching on a few of the bigger areas that we're grappling with currently to come into compliance. So starting on page 2 of the staff report, the discontinuation of service due to non-payment. Some of the bigger impacts are the amount of time that we have to provide the customer before the service can be terminated. One of the larger impacts in this particular area is that residential service may be discontinued no sooner than 5 business days after posting the final notice. The final notice, we affectionately, we know it as the door hanger. So that's what staff calls it. That's what we place on the property approximately 2 days before the water is going to be shut off. So under this new law, they would have up to 5 days before the service is terminated. So that's a substantial increase in time for customers to pay their delinquent account before shutoff. So that's one of the changes that we'll have to make to our billing software. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. One of the other large impacts from the law is that in the case of a landlord-tenant relationship. If the landlord has the utility bill in their name and they're paying it, if they become delinquent on the account, we're now required to notify all of the occupants of the property. So this could be a single-family residence, it could be a duplex, triplex, all the way up to very large apartment complexes that we have here in town. So we are required to notify each and every occupant of the amount delinquent on the bill. All of the information that would ordinarily be given to the person on the account, the landlord, will also be given to the occupant. That's very clear in the law. And the occupants will now have the ability to put the service in their name and to prevent the water from being shut off. The landlord or the person who has the account in their name is still responsible for those delinquent charges, but now the occupant or the tenant now has the ability to put that service in their name to begin paying it, to prevent the shutoff of the water service. But that does mean that there's going to be sharing of information that wasn't previously shared with occupants. So that may make sense in practice for like a single family residence. If the tenant wants to put it in their name just to keep the water on until they can get a hold of the landlord to figure out what's going on. But in the case of a 40-unit apartment complex, it's probably not feasible that the occupant's going to put the service for the whole building if it's on one single meter. So again, in practice, this is going to look a little weird for larger complexes, and it's going to be an impact on city staff in that we're ordinarily just trying to find the property manager on site to try to locate them so they could find the property manager company. Now we're going to be going around door to door to door to door. If it's a large property, hopefully we don't have those very, very often, but it is a impact that we're going to have to be working with. Another significant change from SB 998 is the mandatory deferred, reduced, and or alternative payment schedules. So certain conditions will now preclude discontinuation of service, and a viable payment option will be mandatory to be offered by the city. Mandatory. Specifically, an alternative payment schedule is required to be offered if staff has provided a certification from a medical provider that discontinuation of service will be life-threatening to or pose a serious threat to health and safety of one of the residents of the premises. Or, essentially, and I'm not going to read out the whole list, essentially if you're on some form of public assistance or if your household's annual income is less than 200% of the federal poverty level, you essentially qualify for a mandatory alternative payment arrangement. So we already deal with medical certifications. It doesn't happen very often, but under the current law that's not that is already in effect, if we get a doctor's note stating that it would cause public health and safety issues for the resident, then we do work with that tenant. And we also work with, on a case-by-case basis, with certain with customers that experience hardships. If they come to us and they want us to put them on a repayment plan, we do work with those customers. It doesn't happen very often. It's probably 10 to 12 situations per year, but they are on a case-by-case basis. With this current law, all they have to do is state that they're on some form of public assistance, and again, the list is fairly exhaustive, or if they have annual income of less than 200% of the federal poverty level, as all they have to do is state it, and we're required to offer them a payment schedule. The law does allow for water service providers to certify it by having them bring in some form of proof that they do this. But since they also have the ability to just state that their income is below 200% of the poverty level, we are actually thinking about just offering the payment schedule no matter what. So if somebody comes in and says, I can't pay my bill, we're not going to mess with trying to collect potentially sensitive financial information about the person and just go ahead and offer that payment schedule just without asking any information at all. So it's important to note that one of the the payment options that starts at the bottom of page 2 must be offered: amortization of the unpaid balance, participation in an alternative payment schedule, a partial or full reduction of the unpaid balance financed without additional charges to other ratepayers, or a temporary deferral of payment. So what we're essentially looking at here is a repayment arrangement that exceeds no longer than 12 months, and it would be 0% interest. So there'd be no interest charges charged to the ratepayer. Only one repayment arrangement would be allowed at any given time. So the law is silent on us putting that kind of a restriction on there. We think it makes sense to only have one repayment arrangement at a time. And then they also must stay current on their current charges. So if they come to us saying, we can't pay the amount that's owed, we'd like a repayment schedule, no problem, here you go. But you need to stay current on your balance going forward while you're on the repayment schedule, or it just falls further behind. So we're trying to get a handle on this to become in compliance, but we also have a without sounding too cold-hearted, there is an operation to run. So we need to collect this revenue to pay for the maintenance and operation of our utility systems. So given that, if we do experience a large increase in repayment arrangements, there could be a cash flow crunch in the utility funds. If we have maybe a dozen people per year on the repayment arrangements, it's a blip. You know, you don't even notice it. But if we have, say, 100 or 200 people now that are on repayment schedules, that's revenue that we ordinarily would have collected up front. Now that's being spread over 12 months. We don't want to be too alarmist here, because we don't know what the impact's going to be. But potentially it could impact our cash flow, and we could have to look at needing to set aside more reserves in the enterprise funds just to cover this type of activity. We're not really sure, and a lot of cities aren't really sure how this is going to impact us. There's also going to be some very noticeable physical changes to the actual bill, in that SB 998 also requires the written policy of discontinuation of water services to be available in the prescribed languages spoken in the community. and it's specifically English and any other language spoken by at least 10% of the people residing in the service area. All written notices shall be provided in English and any other language spoken by at least 10%. So that currently, so we're interpreting that right now that it would at minimum be English and Spanish. And then if we find that more than 10% of the language is spoken by, if it's a more, if it's a different language, then we would be obligated to include that. But as of right now, so that's going to take up more space on the bill. Already it's in very small fine print on the back. We can't go any smaller, so we potentially have to add more pages to our bill to comply, which means more paper, printing, mailing costs, and everything, all the et cetera. Again, these are all minor things, but still it's stuff we have to deal with, and it does compound over time. So we have to have a very specific procedure laid out for people who are requesting a deferred or reduced payment, alternative payment schedules. Also important is that there needs to be a formal mechanism in place for a customer to contest or appeal a bill. Currently, right now, if somebody has an issue with their bill, they come to the window or they contact Public Works, and we work with that customer. If they don't believe their water meter is correct or something's going on, we already work with people that come to us with issues or concerns. But we have to identify our formal process in place. And if they are contesting the bill, we are not allowed to turn off their water while they're contesting the bill. And then also of note is that the SB 998 bill also created a requirement for the city to publish an annual report on the number of number of water shutoffs that we conduct in the community for the inability to pay, and post that information on the city's website. So we don't currently publish the number of water shutoffs on our website. It's not a requirement, but now we'll be required to do that. There's nothing in the law that I read that has personal information there, so we're just going to be listing the information in the aggregate. And then finally, the law also limits the amount of fee that a public agency or water service provider can charge for reconnection of water service. We don't currently charge a reconnection fee per se. We charge a disconnection fee. It might be semantics in the eyes of the law, but right now we call it a disconnection fee. We always have, not a reconnection fee. The only time we charge a reconnection fee is if it falls after normal business hours. And it's just to recover staff time. If we have to call out somebody on overtime to go turn the water on, we always try to accommodate the customer. Currently, our charges that we have in place for after hours water turn-ons are within the limitations of the law, so we're okay there. But that said, I know that was a lot of information. That was a really high level summary, and we're still getting our arms around this. Over the next couple months are going to be pretty busy making sure we're in compliance, but we do ask that you do approve those additional appropriations to help us get there. And that's it.
Well, and the amount of paperwork that you're going to say is going to add to this program, and that's going to go to the public.
Well, the actual utility bill will be going to the public just like always, but it'll have additional information on it.
But this information will be included.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. But we keep our fingers crossed that they read it.
That's the hope. And so now it's going to be in more languages, so it should be more accessible. So that's the hope.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Any other comments?
Just one thing. Welcome to the state of California.
Yeah. Any comments or questions from the public? Being none, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Bass?
Yes.
Councilmember Bass?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor
Pinon? Yes. Item 12. Adopt resolution number 2019-076 of the City Council. The City of Reedley declaring a fiscal emergency in order to place a general purpose tax ballot measure on the March 3rd, 2020 statewide primary election, and request the City Attorney to prepare an ordinance for placement on the March 2020 ballot and all necessary documents in support thereof. Paul, you're on again.
Okay. Thank you again, Mayor and City Council. At the last council meeting, the city council received a fairly detailed forecast in the general fund about what we feel to be the most accurate representation of what the next 5 years will look like if no changes are made to our current operations. And the result of that forecast was that there were some fairly eye-popping and significant operating deficits that were showing up in those future years starting next year and then ramping up and compounding thereafter. This was a very detailed forecast that staff spent many months preparing and working on, and was presented to the council. So we feel that this meets the standard of a future fiscal emergency for the city. So it is staff's recommendation to declare a fiscal emergency. This action tonight does not finalize anything whatsoever as far as a potential ballot measure. It simply allows that process to move forward, and it does allow, if adopted unanimously tonight, for the measure to potentially be placed on the March California primary ballot. But again, this action tonight does not stipulate what that tax measure specifically looks like, any details associated with that. I believe the council is fairly well versed on what this action does, but I just need to remind for the public's purposes what we're doing tonight. Article 13 of the California State Constitution requires that the election required for a new or increased general tax must be consolidated at a regularly scheduled general election for members of the governing body of the local government. So that would be normally in November of 2020. Except in cases of emergency declared by a unanimous vote of the governing body. A unanimous approval of the attached resolution is needed in order for the city to bring the proposed general purpose tax ballot measure to the voters on the March 3rd, 2020 statewide primary election. Without a unanimous declaration of fiscal emergency, the city must wait until the next regular general election on the November 5th, 2020 to submit a general tax measure on the ballot. So should the attached resolution be approved, the next step would be for staff to work with the city attorney on ballot measure language and the actual ordinance that would impose a transactions and use tax to be considered by the city council. So that would be in the next 30 to 45 days, the actual ordinance would be brought forward, and all of the details about what that tax measure could potentially look like, that's where all the details would essentially be fleshed out. This resolution here tonight allows for that work to continue, and it allows for the work to continue to be placed in March if that's the will of the council, or it still has the flexibility to go in November as well. This does not lock the council in tonight to a March ballot measure. So I don't know if the city manager would like to add anything.
Yeah, I do want to make a few comments. Council, as you know from the last meeting that we had, the finances of this city, we've been very fiscally prudent over the course of the past 8 years. We've taken actions restructuring our benefits. We've taken actions to minimize our operating costs. But you can see from things like just the item previous, where the state comes in with whatever they want to do, and it impacts our revenues. Not being able to shut off water, a resource we're providing, not being able to collect repayments, not being able to charge interest on that. I mean, all of these things that come from the state, that's one simple example that you just voted on. But there are so many things impacting the city right now. The main one is PERS, although there are so many other things impacting the city. Paul and I were actually last week just bemoaning the state of the PERS. We got the latest invoice, and it is $132,000 more than we paid last year. And so that means without doing anything else in the city, we already have to find $132,000 that we didn't have to find last year. We know that that doubles and triples from there on every single year. So we know that if we made no other changes, and granted that's not something we would do, we're fiscally responsible, but if we made no other changes, that by next year we would be dipping into our reserve, and by the year after we would be through our reserve and out of reserve funds. We know that that would happen if we did nothing else. So the numbers we showed you we're 5 years out, showing a $6 million deficit, almost $7 million deficit. We know that we wouldn't let that happen. But what that means to the community when we look out that far is there will definitely be cuts and services that will be felt by the community. And that's why we've taken such a structured approach to coming at this item, where we started with a public poll. Does the public value the services they receive now, or would they be okay with service cuts? Does the public appreciate what they're paying now, or do they want to have a sales tax measure, support a sales tax measure to retain what they're getting right now, or even in some cases provide a little better service right now? The results astounded me, frankly, when the poll came back, because it was something like 82% in support of providing more money to make sure that we could maintain what we have. And if you'll remember those results, it was stronger about maintaining what we have than even adding anything to it. So the public was very clear that they appreciate the job that is being done by the city right now. So we started with the poll because we didn't want to just throw out taxation. We figured we needed to look at all other measures. And Paul and I are probably two of the biggest just personal anti-tax people I know. But we're not voters in this city. And the voters spoke through that poll. So we've structured these elements to come to you in a way that at any given time the council can say no and not move forward, and at any given time the council can just take that next step, and that next step. So we've done the poll, we've done the fiscal review, we're now at the stage where, frankly, council, I'm calling tonight's vote the $1 million vote. This is not the vote that says we will for sure put an item on a ballot. This is not the vote that says how much that ballot measure is going to request, nor whether it contains a sunset clause, none of those elements. Tonight's vote says, should a vote be made in September that puts the item on the ballot, let's make sure it gets on in March and not November, because that's $1 million difference. So that's critically important to know, because there may be some of you council members that will end up voting no once you're able to fully gather all of the data and talk to folks. You may ultimately vote no on a ballot measure. But if we don't have a unanimous vote tonight, we do not even have the opportunity to go on the March ballot, and therein losing $1 million, because if we wait from March to November, the way that the state collects taxes, we will lose that $1 million. So this is an interesting vote tonight, because it does not, again, it does not put an item on the ballot. It just says if an item ultimately does go, which date is it going to go? Because the state does require a unanimous declaration of fiscal emergency in order to get on a primary. So that is part of tonight's vote. And the other part of tonight's vote is through that vote, it authorizes Scott to move forward with coming up with the ballot language that will come to council. And that is in probably late September. And that's the time where the council's next step would be, do we put an item on the ballot, yes or no? Is it half cent, three quarter cent, or something else, yes or no? And is it sunset clause, yes or no, and any other item that we want to discuss, yes or no? So those are all votes that we would be requesting in September when the actual ordinance and document is brought back. So tonight's vote, in essence, is much more simple. It's, if a ballot item does go, do you want to go in March and grab the additional million, or would you go in November? That is tonight's vote.
Can I ask a question? Now, just going back to the poll. When it was taken, how many individuals did they poll?
So I don't recall the specific numbers, but I will say that it was what's called a statistically significant sample. So the way that public pollsters do, they take just a sampling, but they make sure that that sampling is mathematically significant, meaning it doesn't vary. So you don't need to gather each voter within the city to know how overall people would vote. And in fact, the firm we're using is so accurate. This is the same firm that we used for Measure G 10 years ago. They were so accurate that what they said the poll was back in Measure G was almost exactly what came in the vote that Measure G actually brought in. It was less than 1% difference. So their poll showing, I think it was 81%, frankly, or 80, 72?
72.
Sorry, I exaggerated a bit, but 72, definitely over the majority. 72, my guess is when we get the voting results, if we do put something on the ballot, it's going to be around 71, 72, 73. Mm-hmm. It'll be right there. They're so accurate.
And the reason I ask is we don't know how many people they interviewed. You said 80%. Now, there's going to be questions asked. what is the city going to use it for? And this information has to be out to the public if they're going to vote on it. Mm-hmm. If we don't give enough information to them, we're going to keep them in the dark. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, you just want more money, but you're not telling me what you're going to spend it on.
Right.
And I've always been a proponent of information to the public will help you achieve what you're looking at. Don't keep them in a secret. Don't keep your secret on them, because they'll come back and haunt you.
Completely agree. And one of the things this poll did for us was to tell us where the priorities of our public lie. And they were very clear, the public, in coming back to us. And I jokingly call it the triple P measure, parks, public safety, potholes. Mm-hmm. That's where they said their priorities are. And that's where we're looking at what we would spend these tax dollars on. We have dire needs in each of those areas. And so our goal would be that we would lay that out clearly to the public. Now, the city itself and the elected officials themselves cannot campaign for or against the ballot. But what we can do as a city is provide data on how much things cost us, mm-hmm. how far behind we are in certain areas, and if we had dollars where we would spend them. And that is certainly something we will do should the council vote to move forward with this ballot item. So, and I do need to state to our public, even with a ballot item, we are going to need to make some important decisions moving forward throughout the next few years. Not the least being what we do when the recession finally hits us. And pundits are saying it could be anything from a year to 3 years from now that we have another major downturn in the economy. The numbers we showed you don't include any fiscal downturn in the economy. They just show that massive PERS issue coming. They show what we see in additional taxes coming from the state, all of those. So Paul and I know that even with additional revenue coming forward, we cannot let up on the intense scrutiny we provide to numbers year after year after year. This is probably the most critical fiscal shape I think we will be in, and the entire state of California, by the way. We are definitely not alone in this. Every city is going to be facing fiscal problems. Those cities that have their own retirement system will be facing a different level of fiscal issue, though, because some are fully funded, like Fresno, in their pension system. They're still going to have a fiscal downturn that they deal with, though. So we're not going to be alone in this endeavor, in this effort, through the next few years.
Thank you.
I just like to add that I'm also an opponent of taxing, but if we do it locally, I see it coming back locally, and I see people that come into our city and use our services also put into our system, and we have infrastructure that we have to keep up, and our services has to be kept important. People's going to make the decision on this anyway, and I think the sooner we get it on the ballot, the better off we are. I definitely like the idea of trying to make the March ballot, if at all possible, with this. Because the people's going to speak one way or the other, and that's what you're going to hear. And let's get it to them as soon as we can. Let them make a decision. And I'll go back to saying, if the county was to come in with a tax, we're not going to get our fair share. And that's the problem. If we put it here, it stays here. And I think that's the most important thing about this, is that the money stays in Reedley from this measure. And I do not like taxing. SB1's a prime example. Everybody thought we were going to get fat on the roads because of that. And we get a very small amount of that money because of the way the state dishes it out. So I believe if we're going to work a measure like this, let's do it to the best for the people. And let them make a decision, but let's get it on now. We've already started the process by getting our polls. I prefer to see it go on in March, if at all possible.
So, Nicole, I have a question. On the sales tax, this would be a sales tax item. So currently the sales tax that we charge here in Reedley, what percent do we actually get back that comes to the city?
I'm laughing because I just showed POA these huge charts. They're my favorite charts. And I asked Paul, do I need the charts here tonight for council? In fact, out of every dollar of sales tax that is spent in the city, and you have to buy, you're not just buying a burger, right? You get a penny sales tax off a burger. But out of every dollar of sales tax you spend, the city gets to keep 11 cents. Most of the sales tax goes up to the state, and the county gets another cut of sales tax. So when people spend something here, we only get to keep 11 cents of every sales tax dollar. Property tax is slightly more, that's 16 cents, but even then, people are amazed. When we go out to the public and we talk about where their taxes go, they are amazed that more of the taxes that are generated locally don't stay locally. It's a travesty in my mind.
Sure.
And so the 11 cents that I'm talking about is the general. We do have what's called a special district tax, that's Measure G. And I believe that's 6 cents, six additional cents that we get for just
right.
Measure G.
Correct. Yeah.
So 11 cents out of every sales tax dollar is not a lot when you think about it. And mm-hmm. what I was mentioning to the POA when I met with them, and they were so kind to have Paul and I come and explain the numbers, and I'm actually thrilled that our employees are taking really a strong interest in what's going on in the city here. What I mentioned to them is when we talk about economic development, I hear a lot of people wanting things like bring in a Wendy's, bring in a Burger King, bring in a this, bring in a that, a Dairy Queen. Not a lot of sales tax gets generated off a dollar hamburger. So when we're looking at economic development, we are trying to bring in companies that produce revenue sources and well-paying, good-paying jobs. And I'll give you the example of UHP Stainless Steel Manufacturing. Very few people know of this company that we brought in over the past few years, and yet they manufacture stainless steel vats and devices. And when they sell those are high dollar things. They produce a lot of sales tax, and those jobs are welding jobs, they're high paying jobs. That's the type of company that we focus in on economic development, and that's the type of company we have been successful in bringing in. Now, we also do focus in on the other things, and in fact, Burger King will start building very, very soon here. So it's not that we don't want the amenities for our public, but because our revenues are so heavily dependent upon sales tax, we look for big bang sources for economic development purposes. We are focusing right now, as you know, on a hotel, and frankly want to bring in a national hotelier, and that will bring in what's called TOT tax, or transient occupancy tax. That's tax that a traveler who doesn't live here will pay to us for coming into our city, and we get to use that, and that will supplement the general fund. The numbers we have shown you and that we have provided to you don't include any future development that we may be able to get, because that's so nebulous. That's not something certain that we can count on. But we are not letting up one bit on economic development and trying to get things through the door, as evidenced by the self-help homes. These are market rate homes that will pay property tax into our city. These are residents, these are 61 new homes with homeowners who will be buying things in our city. So even things like that are critically important for economic development and growth. So I that was a really long answer to your 11 cent question, but I just want to make sure that our public is abundantly aware. Mm-hmm. This was not an easy thing for Paul and I to do, and in fact, I think Paul has been asking me for the past 18 months to move forward on a ballot measure, and the first few times I kicked him out the door and said, no, don't want to tax the public. But the numbers are abundantly clear that we have got to do something. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I also want to say I'm not for taxation. It's a really difficult thing for many people at Reedley. However, you know, it's necessary. And, you know, this, if I understand it correctly, if it's going to be, $1 million is a lot of money, right? And if it's only going to put it in the community's forefront sooner, it's a good thing. And it's not going to lock us into anything until we get there, right? So I think it's a good thing.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Mayor. The council, after tonight's vote, will still have two more votes on this item. We'll have the ordinance that comes forward from Scott in late September, and then a second reading of the ordinance. So there are still two more votes required of council, two more opportunities to think on this, to vote yay or nay.
Well, with this being said, do we...
the public.
Yeah. Public have any comments or questions? Being none, do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Begrudgingly, yes.
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much, Council.
Thank you, Paul. We move on to council reports.
And we begin with Council Member Salino.
Council Member Betancourt.
Nothing. Back.
Mayor Pro Tem.
I attended Good Morning Reedley at Lee's service. And a lot of the things that were promoted here tonight were talked about. And I'd just like to encourage anybody for this art hop that's coming up in a couple of weeks. If you know anybody who is an artist or does music, I think the more that we have available, it'll make it a better evening. So ask your people that do art and do music and come out and enjoy that. Just again to reiterate the mural, I see they added a few more pieces of fruit on there, and I think it really looks nice, and I think it's a good entrance into Reedley. People that come down and go like to the park and come here to our city for city services or just to visit somebody here at City Hall, I think they're getting a really pretty entrance into our city. So thank you, staff that coordinated that. That's all I have.
Thank you. I have none, so I turn it over to...
Great, I do have a few. One is, you know of our port entrance monument and how it got hit by a car. We do, in fact, have some good news that, one, it is covered under our property insurance, so they will be covering all but a small deductible. So they are working on putting together the design fabrication and should be installed sometime around mid to late October, where we'll have that new monument back. So very fortunately, the woman in the car who hit the monument is okay, and she had insurance, and so our property insurance will go after that separately. We won't have to worry about that. Great. So it's a good thing. I do want to point out to council that very unusually on September 10th, we have no business items as of yet to bring the council. So potentially we are looking at not holding a meeting on September 10th, and we will keep you posted. If a business item does come forward with a time urgency, we will have a meeting, but right now it's looking like there are no items to bring forward to you. So we'll keep you posted on that. Oh, I'm sorry. Sylvia is reminding me that we need a straw poll consensus to go dark if that is the case. So just a yay or nay.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Council. I want to announce that the library property that we had held for the county has now formally been deeded over to them. I signed and notarized the deeds, and the planning will begin in October. I expect that by the end of October, the county will put together a timeline on how they're going to plan this and how they're going to engage the community in the new library building in the planning and construction architecture. So I will keep you posted on that, but I did just want to let you know that yesterday they did get the formal notarized deeds, and so that property is now in the hands of the county and they can move forward. So that's very exciting, and our friends of the library is ecstatic.
Yes, that's great.
Yes, good stuff. Other good stuff, Joseph Oldham, who you know as our electric aviation partner here at CalSTART, he and I have been asked by Boeing to fly up to Seattle on September 26th and give a presentation to 100 of their executives on our electric aviation project. They are so astounded of how we've been able to move this forward, and as you may or may not know, they have not yet developed an electric aircraft that goes in production yet. So we have something that they don't have and they want to know about it. So we do, very fortunately, already have a contract that's been inked between New Vision Aviation. That's the nonprofit that was started that's holding the lease on our planes. New Vision Aviation has inked a deal with Boeing. Boeing is providing a small stipend to New Vision to help get that program off the ground, no pun intended. We believe there are some economic development opportunities that we can potentially grasp if we go up to Boeing and show them how sophisticated Reedley truly is. So September 26th, we'll be flying up. We'll be speaking to their group of executives, and keep your fingers crossed, because this is huge. This is the first Fortune 500 investment in the Valley. It's been made with Reedley and Mendota. So it's phenomenal.
That's great.
Phenomenal stuff. In line with that, our final FAA petition for exemption with all of the 100 hours of flying that they wanted us to do, that was submitted to Washington, D.C. today. So from here on out, it's just crossing your fingers and lots of prayers, and within the next few months, we should get that exemption and can fully start the program moving forward with training pilots. So awesome stuff is happening, and it's just amazing to us. I also want to let you know that on November 16th, the Faith House is going to be having their first fundraiser banquet. As you know, when we were in a grant relationship with them, with the state grant, we mentioned to them that the city could not subsidize them once the grant dollars were done, and I'm so proud of the team. They're moving forward with fundraising efforts, and so November 16th will be a formal banquet and fundraiser. I know Chief is attempting to help them get a really good speaker so that we can get a lot of members in the community coming forward and buying tickets for that. So we'll keep you posted. I'm sure the city will buy a few tables, as we do for many fundraisers within this community. And then lastly, COG is beginning an East Side Corridor study that's focusing on the 99 connection to the 168 and over to the East Side. I'm thrilled to say that they are including all East Side cities in this, even though the 168 and the 99 don't touch us. They want our input in this. So we'll be participating with them. And I think this is a good thing, because very frequently there are corridor studies where we are left behind and there aren't connections, adequate connections made to corridors. So I think this is a good thing. We'll get this started sometime this month. So do we have staff members with any updates?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, since you will probably be going dark on the 10th, I just wanted to put a date in your ear. On September 12th, we will be swearing in 3 new police officers. So we will be doing that at 10 o'clock here in the council chambers, so you might want to come early because there may not be any room. You may end up having to sit up there. But it's at 10 o'clock on September 12th, and we'll be swearing in 3 new officers.
I believe that's all from staff, Mayor.
Very good. If that is all,
going to be open on Monday.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Salino. No, in fact, we will be closed for Labor Day on Monday, 3-day weekend.
We'll enjoy.
Thank you.
Well, great meeting. Have a great evening, great night. We'll see you next time. Meeting adjourned.